TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those listening live at www.tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe. Happy holidays and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 3 hours of hockey talk ahead for you on this Saturday afternoon, coming up in about 90 minutes' time. Bobby Holik is going to join us, former New Jersey Devil, former New York Ranger, now has a website, holikonhockey.com. We're going to hear from Bobby Holik, talk a little bit of lockout, things of that nature. And then at 2 o'clock, Corey Pronman of ESPN Insider is going to join us, break down a little bit of the World Junior, some of the other rosters on some of the other countries. That should be make for an interesting conversation with the World Juniors. Pre-tournament games already underway, and the tournament getting underway in just a matter of days, both on TSN and on this fine radio station. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can just search for us on the Legal Curve there. And the website with your latest NHL, Winnipeg Jets, CBA, lockout, whatever else hockey-related news that you make think of is www.illegalcurve.com. Ezra, Richard, good afternoon. How are you gentlemen doing?
Good afternoon. Richie and I were talking about this with you before the show started. It's great. Obviously, games were canceled, but with the World Junior Games on today and, you know, the Spengler Cup coming up, there's actually something to get. There's a reason for me to wake up, Drew, as opposed to just checking illegalcurve.com for the lockout news. But there's actually some hockey to watch. Richie was flabbergasted that I woke up this morning at 8:30 to watch Canada and Sweden. But I woke up early and it was a tie. I'm not sure why they went to overtime in a shootout in a pre-tournament game.
Why you watched a pre-tournament game, but in any event, I'm more surprised that you woke up at 8 o'clock for the game than the day you watched the hockey game.
You're surprised that, Richie, I should correct you. You're surprised that I wake up 8 o'clock to go to a full-time job.
Yeah, that is true.
That's true also, yeah.
When you're not forced to do that on a Saturday, I'm really surprised that you wake up.
I actually have a wake-up service for that, though.
I think TSN's offering some sort of Jay and Dan wake-up service for the World Junior Games.
Really?
Yeah.
Remember the one like Molson did back in 98 with Nagano?
Yeah.
And I remember I had that and I got woken up once and then I started watching the game and I fell asleep and I missed the rest of it.
Well,
I think it was a Sweden game that year, actually, 98.
I remember something. Yeah, I woke up and but they called you within a range and they called you within, you know, if they called you 30 minutes before puck drop,
that's right,
you'd be like, okay, well, I'm up, and then you fall back asleep.
That's
before
what happened.
Puck drop. Yeah,
because it was curling and it was
so they should
stuff.
Almost call you like right
I got a special wake up call just for the curling. In fact,
but you were at the retirement home, so they
that's
go into
true.
Every room.
That's
and
true.
Wake
yeah,
you up.
They check on people.
Well, Drew goes
point.
To bed at 5 o'clock after he has dinner at 3.
Yeah, that's true. You know, also a true story. You guys are quite humorous.
I think that might have set a record for the fastest age joke. To
that's
start
true.
An illegal curve.
That's true. That's a good point. We usually don't break into those, at least until the second segment of the program. But I'm going to take off a little bit early, so you guys have to get going a little bit early. You know, I have my flight to catch later on. So
you're going to the home state.
I'm going to the home state, Kentucky, yeah. for the holiday season. So I'll duck out and leave you guys for the last 15 or so minutes of this fine program. I think you guys can handle it on your own at that point.
Well, we have a special guest planned. We don't know if he's going to be able to join us, but we're planning a little special something for the last segment.
What I don't know can't hurt
you. Well, it's already special.
Let's get underway. Let's get started.
Ezzy, you keep talking like that. You won't be in the last segment.
Agreed.
Let's get started with the Evander Kane stuff from earlier this week.
Sure.
We all have seen the picture at this point in time. He tweeted it, well, supposedly in Las Vegas in November, reaching out to his mentor.
Didn't Drew take the picture?
Floyd Money Mayweather.
Yeah.
And it caused the predictable brouhaha that you would expect a picture of that nature to inspire, mm-hmm. especially given these circumstances.
Yep.
Let me start with this question first. If he takes that picture and it's not in the midst of a lockout, say it's just a regular off-season day, you know, it's the middle of August and, you know, training camp starts in 6 weeks and there's no question. Is this as big of an issue as it is under the current circumstances?
No, it's not as big of an issue. It might be made of a little bit of an issue, but think about the flow of information that comes out when the hockey season is going on. Or even in an off season when there's draft picks and there's not a lockout. you know, hanging over everybody, because the truth is the flow of information. If you look at all the, you know, the websites, and you go to Legal Curve, you go to a bunch of other websites, there really isn't much information out there in terms of, you know, day-to-day hockey information. It's really limited. So what do you think? What happens is then every story gets that much more attention than it would in another situation. So that's exactly what happened here. Now, there's other things that came from this, but that, in terms of the attention it got the most attention because there's really little to talk about, and plus it's a money issue during a time when they're fighting over a lot of money and other people are being affected by it.
Richie, you know the saying, timing is everything. I don't know if you guys have heard that saying. I just made it up right now. No, but honestly, though, the timing is everything. It really applies here. Because if, you know, all things being equal, if this was a regular season and, you know, the Jets were gearing up for, you know, their next game and Evander Kane posted this, we might even notice it. We might just be like, okay, you know, this is just a picture that Evander Kane is tweeting out. But it's the timing of everything. Right now, there are hockey fans across the world, really, who aren't sure if there's going to be an NHL season. There are a lot of people who have already lost their jobs, you know, and because of the lockout. And when a picture like that comes out, and you know what, I understand Vander Kane is free to post whatever he wants, and he very, you know, from the interviews that were done, you know, with the Free Press and other members of the media, when he says, you know, he wasn't thinking, obviously he wasn't, because, you know, it's a perception thing. And when you see a guy who is posting a picture, regardless if it was taken in November, Richie, it's that, it's, you know, he's flaunting his money at a time when, you know, the players are you know, pretty much saying that they don't want to give up their salaries and all that. It's just the timing was really bad.
There was a lockout in November anyhow, so I'm not sure how that necessarily affects it. And I realize that technically speaking, it is a lockout. It's an owner's lockout of the players. Having said all of that, and the players are just as much right to fight for the things as the owners want to, Drew, maybe just before I get into this, do you want to just explain for people who maybe don't know what the picture...
Sure. The picture is Evander Kane on a balcony outside in Las Vegas. You can see the strip in the background. I think it's the Cosmopolitan Hotel.
Okay.
And it's him holding a... You know, people speculated the amount of money. We're not going to.
It was stacks of hundreds.
We know that one bill was a $100 bill.
I zoomed in.
If
one of them was a $100, the rest weren't fives.
You would think that they were probably all hundreds or in some denomination, but it's irrelevant. They're stacks and stacks and stacks of cash bound together.
Well, it's not irrelevant. If it's $1 bills, I don't think it's a big deal.
Right,
but
we don't
stack $1 bills.
Same way you stack $100
bills. $1 bills, though.
You might.
I don't have enough to stack.
We know. Anyways, he's got stacks of cash bound together, and he's holding them sort of four bundles of these stacks of cash, and he's holding them like a cell phone, like if he was holding sort of an old-style Zach Morris 1980 cell phone in his hands.
Right.
And he's shouting out to Floyd Mayweather, the boxer, who, for whatever reason, is somebody that, on frequent occasion, Evander Kane has tweeted at. Who seems to be...
He's a big fan.
He seems to be trying to gain Floyd Mayweather's attention and affection.
Yeah.
And Floyd Mayweather does similar, I think what you can... I'm safe to say stupid things with money, where he flaunts his wealth and his pictures and his bets that he's making, you know, $500,000 on a second half line in a college basketball game. So Kane is reaching out to him for whatever reason.
Okay, in terms of the actual thought on this, I think there's a couple of things to, I think, point out. I think the first thing is, let's talk about Evander Kane, the talent, and then Evander Kane, the person.
Okay.
Evander Kane, the talent, I've written about it on illegalcurve.com, where he scores from, what his numbers are comparable to others, what he should be getting in contracts, in my opinion, and a bunch of other things. I have respect for the talent. He's got one of the top five wrist shots in the National Hockey League, as far as I'm concerned. He's big, he's strong, he's fast. He's not a great passer. He becomes predictable with his moves. We all know those things. But skill-wise, you know, I think he's going to get to the 40-goal threshold, and I think he's going to score 40 goals multiple times. I think he's going to score at least 35 goals. I mean, last year you had a guy who scored 30 goals, didn't play every game, played on the second line, really, with minimal talent up beside him, and hardly played, didn't play first power play unit very often, and hardly got out there for 5-on-3s in place of guys like, instead of, you know, guys like Brian Little were used instead. So taking all those things into account, there's no question we respect his talent. But there also, to me, is no question that there's an issue here.
Attitude.
And there's been character issues raised for a long time. And does this one picture say, oh my God, there's a character issue? No, but taken in totality of all the things that have happened or we've heard happened, I think, you know, you have to say, well, there may be an issue. And I think the biggest issue for me is talking to people around the team or associated with the team, whatever it may be. And it's that, you know, his teammates and him. If he's this, you know, if he's doing a bunch of things off the ice, but his teammates still love him and he's kind of a crazy guy, you know, kind of seems like Patrick Kane, a little bit crazy.
But most teammates,
seem to still like him.
Yeah, they say good things about him. Yeah.
Evander Kane's done a couple of things wrong here. First of all, I don't ever hear a teammate stick up for the guy. You tell me when the first time. Has anybody done that?
No, you don't hear. Normally, you're right. In a situation, you know, when Patrick Kane has his run-ins with, you know, where he's featured on Deadspin or whatever else, you do usually hear somebody come out and say, that's just Patrick being Patrick. He's a young kid, but he's a good guy deep down, and, you know, he'll learn.
And the
silence from his teammates in this instance is relatively deafening.
In every instance, though. I mean, the other problem Kane's had is he's had a bunch of rumors around him. And, you know, trade rumors or this demand. He's never once said, you know, I want to play in Winnipeg. He's never dismissed them. So he leaves the speculation open. Either he doesn't care or it's true. In my opinion, that would be my opinion of the situation. I think, all in all, I mean, I think if you say there's no issues here, you know, in terms of his teammates and his relationship, in my opinion, in terms of some of the off-ice decisions that he makes, in terms of his performance over in Russia, I don't read too much into that in terms of future performance, but in terms of character, you know, other people have left their teams, but it seemed like he didn't really go there caring at all.
Let's talk about his performance in Russia briefly. Do you think there's any chance he really... this is just strictly my opinion, but I believe he went to Russia and thought he'd be able to coast there and just dominate without having to put forth the appropriate level of effort.
I think there's probably some truth to that. I think a lot of players probably think that, and they want to just get a paycheck. Hey, so, I mean, I see that. I think, though, Drew, the tweet is insensitive. I mean, do I personally care if he's tweeting stuff? I just think Twitter, for the most part, is ridiculous anyhow, and I think that guys who post pictures like that just want attention. That's the day and age we live in. But in terms of, is it insensitive? Oh, you know, he can do whatever he wants. He's earned that money. That's not the point. The point is, in the bigger scheme of things, if you look at it as a whole, people are affected by the lockout. And if an owner did this, same idea. You know, you'd be like, well, you know, flaunting the money around the players. It's just owners and players have so much more money than everybody else. It's just, the point is, you can argue for what it's right and all that stuff. And people will let you do it, although they're more disinterested by the day. But you can't flaunt it. It's like anything else in sports or in life. You can't flaunt it. You know, if you walk around, if you go out and buy a beautiful car, Drew, you go out and buy the nicest BMW in town.
Okay.
People will say, oh, no, Drew's earned that. He's done a good job. If you go buy the BMW, you start flashing it around, throwing your keys around, pulling up places and parking right on the curb and acting like a big shot, people probably won't like you.
You're right. If any owner, you know, if you want to flip it around, if any owner that happened to be on Twitter, I think Ted Leonsis is on Twitter, sure, the, you know, Washington Capitals owner. Sure. If he started taking pictures in the middle of the lockout of his, you know, eight BMWs and he's got, you know, four Rolls Royces and everything else, and you're right, flaunted his cash, the reaction would be just the same. I don't think that the reaction is any more visceral or any different than it would be for any other player who was in the same situation. So, Evander Kane is 21 years old.
There's a track record, though.
There is a track record of stupidity. It's a track record of stupidity. It's called a spade a spade.
Absolutely.
You know,
I agree.
Evander Kane is 21 years old. He has more money than most of us will ever see in our lifetime, and he also doesn't know how to handle that money in such a manner that it's appropriate. He simply just goes out and he flaunts his attention. Or he flaunts the cash around and he shows it off. And if he sat at home or if he just did that without being on Twitter, if he was a big shot in Vegas and he wasn't on Twitter showing off,
Nobody would care.
Nobody would know. Because I'm certain he's not the only hockey player that's made a trip to Vegas in the course of this offseason, gambled too much or too little or spent too much money or done whatever you want to do. But if you're not documenting it every second of every day, nobody's any the wiser.
If somebody, let's go to break here. I want to talk about this more after, though.
Okay.
If somebody took the picture of Kane unsuspecting, and, you know, if Kane was up flaunting around money with some of his buddies and somebody took a picture of him and tweeted it out and it wasn't him tweeting it out,
yeah,
I would say, you know what? Just having some fun and big. It's the decision, the conscious decision to post that, which just doesn't really make any sense to me. But at the same time, you have to, at this point in time, he certainly doesn't seem to be a person who thinks about things before they're done or they're said.
I also don't think he cares.
Also true, I think.
I also don't think he cares. I mean, that's his prerogative.
Yeah.
He can say, this is who I am. I have this money. I've earned it. regardless of if you earn it or not. I mean, somebody's paid him for it, so you've earned it.
Yes, you've earned it, yeah.
And I can do what I want with it, and damn you all if you don't like it. And that's his prerogative. Let's talk more about this after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Do I think it's going to happen that he's going to be here next year? Maybe. Do I think he wants probably out? Probably. Do I think signing the contract means that he wants to be here for 6 years? Absolutely not.
Evander Kane, Richard, discussing Evander Kane, September 22nd, 2012, when he had signed his six-year contract extension with the Winnipeg Jets. In light of those comments, you said it in September and the brouhaha from around this week. I think those comments are still valid.
I still stand by him.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was telling, I remember in that conference call when he signed that six-year deal, it was telling that neither the team offered nor he wanted a no-trade clause. To me, that was always something relevant. Let's talk about the columns that have been written this week in the light of this.
Sure.
In the light of this. Gary Lawless, Winnipeg Free Press, you know him here on the station, friend of ours, said that he doesn't expect Evander Kane to remain a Winnipeg Jet for the length of that contract. Do you agree with that sentiment?
So, Remus, you have that clip, don't you? What I said in September. I mean, I feel the same way as I did then. I think that the 6 years, I mean, Remus probably have the full clip.
I don't think it really shows you anything other than the fact that Evander Kane's agent wanted to, make sure he gets a six-year deal just in case the limit goes down to 5 years after this next CBA. Evander Kane wanted to cash in. I don't know if this means that he's going to be in the Jets jersey for the long haul.
I agree with that sentiment that you said back in September. Let me ask you this question. Do you think Evander Kane is being treated any differently if he was in Winnipeg versus being in any other city that follows hockey with this passion? If he was in Toronto or Montreal or Calgary or Edmonton and tweeted out a picture like that, do you think the reaction would be any different?
I think it would have been worse. I mean, Evander Kane has let's be honest here. I mean, the guy is the most talented player on the Jets.
I agree with that.
He was given number 9, and when he had to ask Bobby Hull to wear number 9, I mean, the guy is... I mean, it's like the Scarface quote. It's like the world is his. I mean, the guy is the young, he's the face of the Jets. Evander Kane, along with other players, the Jets obviously have, Andrew Ladd and Blake Wheeler and Bogosian. The Jets have a lot of young talent, but I think it would have been just as bad, if not worse, Drew, if he was doing this in Toronto or whatever. I mean, and I got to be honest. I've followed Evander Kane since he was with the Vancouver Giants, just like a lot of people have. And he was a good world junior player. He won gold for Canada. I mean, the guy is extremely talented. And we've said that ad nauseum on the show. I mean, but we hear the stories. We go out and you hear the stories about this and that. And the perception is that he has a bad attitude. He has a poor attitude. And I'm not being judgmental. And I've given Evander Kane the benefit of the doubt, like a lot of us have. But you hear, his teammates saying this or that, and the perception is that he has a poor attitude at the very least. And then, he's tweeting pictures of himself, with money. And the thing is, yeah, fine, anybody can tweet anything they want. I get that. The argument is, people are making a big deal about this. But the reality is, the one thing that you don't want to tweet, Richie, during the lockout at this time of the year, when there have been people that have lost money because of this lockout that aren't hockey players, the one thing that you don't want to tweet is a guy flashing stacks of $100 bills in your face.
Let me ask you guys this question. I agree wholeheartedly with what you said, Ezzy. First of all, my impression when the Jets signed him to that contract is the Jets sort of had to hold their nose a little bit when they did it. From everything you read about, Mark Chipman and the Jets organization, they do put a value on personality and on class and on doing things the quote unquote right way, being the true north kind of player.
Yep.
Now, obviously, not everybody can be painted with the same brush, but I think in their heart of hearts, Evander Kane is probably a little bit too flashy, a little bit too me-centric. Mm-hmm. As a traditional true north, Winnipeg, what they have in a vision for the Winnipeg Jets being.
I'd agree.
He can get away with that because he's the most talented player on the team.
So talent usually wins out over anything else, because, well, you know, eventually, you know, you can be a True North kind of player, and they can have a team of True North kind of players. But if that team doesn't win, then that's they need to change the motto, you know, or the way they go about building their team. So he is certainly the most talented player on the team. Do you think, you know, this was written yesterday, and it was written on a website, and it bothered me a great deal, because I don't think people should deal in this language casually, and I think this was done haphazardly. Do you think there was
I'm going to get in there and say, first of all, any article like this is a nice way to increase your hits.
Sure, it's a way to just cause controversy without having to actually. It's a cheap article to write, and it's a dangerous article to write.
Mm-hmm.
And that the article was written that it tied race, Evander Kane's race, to the reaction that he received in the city of Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of the opinion that race had absolutely nothing to do with the way that people reacted to it. People would have reacted to it, to this picture, the same way if he was black, if he was white, or whatever ethnicity he mm-hmm. was. And to start calling out people in the city of Winnipeg, or, and I'm certainly not saying racism doesn't exist, because it certainly does. That would be naive of us to say that some people aren't racist. Unfortunately, they are. But to say that everybody that criticized Evander Kane did so because he is a young African-Canadian, of African-Canadian ethnicity, and we have a problem with African-Canadians, is to me irresponsible. It's cheap. And it's really shameful, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, so where's the evidence, right? I mean, I don't know. I just think it's you know, you're making a lot of assumptions there. I would go based on the behavior. First of all, you can't go on. I think the article referenced, you know, people on Twitter were being racist towards him. Well, I'll tell you something. You go on Twitter and type in any racist term, and a lot of people are saying a lot of racist things about a lot of people towards a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, Twitter.
Twitter gives an avenue for cowards to be tough.
That's right. Everybody, you know, using fake names and all that jazz. So that's always fun. But I mean, overall, the treatment in Winnipeg, is that because of his race? No, I think it's because of decisions or things people have heard and overall attitude and things like that. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Tkachuk.
Well, I mentioned this off air. Exactly right. When Keith Tkachuk was a Winnipeg Jet, way back when, there's the famous story of him lighting a $100 bill on fire.
Allegedly.
I mean, and most people at this point sort of assume that it's an actual story. And I mean, I think it probably is.
I have no clue.
Right.
Anyway,
if there was a picture of Keith Tkachuk lighting a $100 bill on fire during the day and era of Twitter, do you not think that the outrage would be just the same, if not stronger? Of course it would be. People would be infuriated at that. And last time I checked, Keith Tkachuk was white.
Drew, like you said, it's dangerous when you start bringing in racism. I don't think that that's an issue here in Winnipeg at all. And
Racism might very well be, and it is certainly an issue in Winnipeg,
but in this instance. I'm not talking about, of course. Okay. I mean,
I just want to clarify that.
Right. But the issue here, and I think it is dangerous, but it's also, you know, we're getting away from the point here. It's that he has a poor attitude, and if he doesn't change that, you know, whether or not, you know, it's speculation. I know Gary wrote the article, and you know, that's his opinion. He's a columnist. What Gary does. That's his opinion. And, you know, I'm not disagreeing or agreeing with it, but I respect Gary for writing the article. That's not the racism article, by the way. It's the article about whether Evander Kane's time is limited in Winnipeg. And you know what? I'll say this much. I'll agree with Gary in the sense that if Evander Kane keeps up this attitude and, you know, his kind of I don't care what I do attitude, I don't think he'll last very long in Winnipeg, because it becomes a negative influence in the dressing room. So you could be the most you could be a 70 goal scorer, Richie, if nobody wants to play with you and you're going around town and just disrespecting everyone. Eventually, the act gets tired.
And if you're disrespecting your teammates, you know, in Gary's article, he's talked about how teammates have tried to sort of counsel him and get him to grow up and see, you know, what he's doing and, you know, might be the error of his ways. And if he's discounting that, well, you know, when teammates feel disrespected by one of their own, especially a young player. They don't really stand for that.
Chemistry matters. People overlook chemistry all the time and say, oh, well, whatever, we can't quantify it. It's garbage.
Richie, I think that age garbage. Argument is also a little bit, it's getting tired as well. I mean, Mark Scheifele is 19 years old. He has a good attitude. I don't have any problem with Zach Bogosian's attitude. He's 21 years old. Why do we keep saying, oh, Evander Kane's 21 years old? You know what? The reality is hockey is a team sport. You got to be a team player.
Of course, Evander Kane should be more mature than that. And, you know, some people, you know, and you're right. You hear 21-year-old, well, he's allowed to be immature. Yeah. Well, you know,
are you going to say that when he's 25?
Well, but the truth is,
immature and rude is different too, Drew. Immature, you know, let's have, there's a distinction there between immature behavior and, you know, I don't want to say some of these words. I mean, acting stupid.
Yeah,
stupidly. So.
I agree with you there. I mean, you're right. I mean, being if you're immature, you might be able to grow out of that. But if you're a jerk, you could just be a jerk for life.
True.
We don't know. I mean, you know, if you're not, and I'm not saying, I don't know Evander Kane at all. So yeah. Maybe privately, maybe his friends would say he's really just a nice guy and we're just, you know, seeing what we see through the lenses of our glasses.
I'm just asking one question.
Yeah.
Have you heard any teammates say anything like that?
No, you have not heard one teammate come to his defense. And you would think that if some of his teammates really did want to have his back, they can find ways to reach out to the media and get their opinions across that say, you know, and make themselves heard that, you know, Evander is young and Evander does some silly things, but deep down inside in the locker room, Evander Kane is an asset to this team. And if Evander Kane, you know, and if Evander Kane comes into shape, it comes into camp, if there is a camp, in poor shape, there'll be another strike solidly against against his name.
If you score, people like you, you get points and all that stuff. But I mean, people also, players don't love playing with guys who don't pass either. I mean, let's be honest. So, right. I mean, you think about your own team. You play on a line with a guy who doesn't pass. How quickly do you get annoyed? I get annoyed pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agreed.
But Drew, that's part of the whole thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and Richie, it's back to what Drew asked us at the beginning of the segment about, you know, would this be different if this was Toronto, Montreal, New York? And you know, what I have to say to that is, you know, you ask any hockey person that's come through Winnipeg and, you know, everybody says Winnipeg's got great hockey fans. I mean, look at hockey's life in Winnipeg. And I don't think that we're, you know, picking on Evander Kane or whatever because, you know, he had a good season this year. He didn't play a full season, but he scored 30 goals, you know, and it's just these things keep popping up and, you know, you connect the dots and it's not. We don't want to be having to talk about this. I mean, it's not like we talk about, oh, what are we going to talk about this week when we say, oh, you know, let's talk about the negative things Evander Kane has done this week. We wish we were just talking about how good he is as a hockey player, but these things keep popping up. And unfortunately, we're not painting him with a negative brush. He's kind of doing that to himself.
Agreed. Another part that nobody's really brought up, as far as I know, is that, you know, Evander Kane can want to reach out to whoever he wants to reach out to. Floyd Mayweather is not a good guy in my books.
I don't know enough about.
Well, Floyd any guy Mayweather who's been charged and found guilty of domestic violence is not a guy I want to be reaching out to.
Floyd Mayweather has so much money, he clearly doesn't know what to do with it. And I mean, whether you're a boxing fan or not.
I don't really care how he spends his money. But the guy's a domestic abuser. He's been found guilty of that.
Right.
So, that's not a good guy. That's not a guy that, you know, I want, that I would be reaching out to. Evander can do whatever he wants, but it's all sort of part and parcel with the whole package is that, you know, maybe Floyd Mayweather isn't the best influence that you want to be emulating in the course of your life.
That's why I emulate you, Drew.
I am a good influence.
I follow you and I try to take my lead from you.
You believe in the Tao of Drew.
I believe in Drew. I believe in Drew.
Yeah. Drew's a domestic snoozer.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, get in touch with him at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230 6129.
Give David a call. It might be, you know, close to Christmas, but
Christmas is the, you know, buy a house for a Christmas gift.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be quite the gift. But by the way,
as he'll move in with you.
By the way, Richie, isn't it nice that Drew dressed up as Santa?
I am growing a beard.
Yeah.
So are you, Ezzy.
Yeah, it's going to be great. By the time it gets to 4 or 5 weeks, it's just our beards are just going to be full of like little bits of food and stuff.
What do you mean by the time we get to 4 and 5 weeks?
Well, because the beard will be bigger.
Ezzy, aren't you 4 or 5 weeks pregnant?
The way I've been packing the beers back, it might be, but it's going to be fun. Have you set up your page yet? I haven't set my page up yet.
I set my page.
Well, tell people what you're talking about.
Yeah, so Ezzy and I are growing beards in support of the Heart and Stroke Foundation. We're participating in the Festival du Voyageur beard growing contest.
Yep.
So from we started last Thursday. And so from last Thursday all the way through the end of February, I believe the 22nd of February, if I'm not mistaken, we will be growing beards, raising funds for the Heart and Stroke Foundation. And you can track our progress on a weekly basis on illegalcurve.com. In fact, if you go there now and you click on, I believe, Friday's morning papers, so yesterday's morning papers, you can see the progress of Ezzy of our beards as we get on the growing season, as it were.
We're only a week in, so, yes. I mean, they're getting... I mean, I have like pretty good facial hair. You need like a good solid 2 weeks, I think. So by next week at this time, I think we'll have good beards. But I think right now you're still kind of, it doesn't look like both of us, you know?
Yeah.
But 2 weeks, by the time we're getting around 4 or 5 weeks, so that's when you have to consider trimming. I know you're going to trim. I'm just going to keep, I'm going that libel style.
That's well.
No trimming at all.
No trimming, no chances of employment, all sorts of good things.
No, I have an employment. I don't need to worry about that.
Exactly.
It's going to be fun.
Let's talk about the CBA because, well, nothing happened, so you know, this should be a short conversation. They canceled all the games through January the 14th. The only reason that makes me happy is that we know when the deadline is now.
Yeah.
But the deadline really isn't January 14th, is it? Because if you're going to have a two-week training camp or a week training camp and a few days for people to report, I think the season's going to start January 28th. Like, isn't the deadline kind of like the 6th or the 7th?
I think they could, if they made a deal, they can make a deal up until about the 14th, I think.
You think so? Because they, generally speaking, have been canceling games like a week or two in advance of the deadline.
Yep.
Right. Usually. But, I mean, you know, if it comes January 14th and they're negotiating.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, then, and, you know, the negotiations fall apart on the 14th, they'll just cancel the season in my books. But, I mean, you know, and the truth is, when they were still talking about the possibility of it being an 82-game season, they were talking about extending the regular season to the end of April.
Right.
And so if they don't start till the end of January, let's say, they could still, you know, they could still add some games at the end of April to make it a 48-game season.
Richie makes a good point, though. I mean, the red alert date looks like it's January 15th around there, but they shouldn't leave it till then because it's a logistical nightmare to be planning Stanley Cup games playoff games that are going, you know, into early May, first round games, but that is realistically the date. The NHL, obviously, for obvious reasons, hasn't, obviously, for obvious reasons, that's a double, makes no sense. The deadline is, you know, somewhere in between January 6th or 7th to January 20th.
Do you think they negotiate before New Year's Day?
That's a good question, Drew.
They haven't really negotiated in any legitimate sense in a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
It's not like it's
probably
going...
Probably, maybe 60-40, no, maybe.
I don't think that they start until New Year's Day, because the truth is, it's not like it's going to take them weeks upon weeks upon weeks to get... There's three issues that they still need to resolve, based on everything we hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those three issues really can be resolved...
Today.
On a high level, within hours of sitting down and agreeing to it. It's not like it's going to, you know, the paperwork always takes longer, but, you know, you can finish with the paperwork after you get started and you get started with training camp and everything else along those lines.
I was assuming lots of that's already somewhat
probably
drafted,
done.
You know,
exactly.
Many variations of it.
The things they've agreed upon.
It's not like they're, you know, drafting the American Constitution here. I mean, of course it's a, you know, it's a huge document, Richie. You know about that stuff more than we do, but... You know,
speak for yourself, Ezzy. I play a fake lawyer on radio.
Right. And you're not a doctor, but you'll take a look.
Exactly.
But, you know, Richie, it comes down to when they have a few sheets. You know, Gary Bettman talked about that. They have, you know, their points, and it's almost like a memo, like a 6 or 7 page memo, and they check things off. But now that there's this disclaimer of interest that's been voted on, and I know we're going to talk about that a little bit, but now that that disclaimer of interest has been voted on, they have until January 2nd, I believe, to take action on it. I still think that that doesn't mean anything as far as the negotiating. I mean, they can have talks over the phone. They can have talks in whether, you know, they're publicized or not up until then. They don't have to wait until then. But the way things are looking right now, it's almost appears that why are we going to negotiate when we know games have been canceled until January 14th now? It seems like the serious negotiations are going to happen as soon as, you know, the year 2013 is, you know, comes in, and on January 2nd, everybody goes back to work. It seems like that's when, you know, they have 2 weeks to decide whether there's going to be a season or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's the disclaimer of interest is allowing the players to file lawsuits and all that stuff. And well, as we said last week on the show, they only take a vote when they know it's guaranteed that
exactly.
It's going
to
be.
Don't talk to me about how obviously united the Players Association is about this disclaimer of interest. How amazing it is that, you know, 783 out of, you know, and only voted yes and only 22 voted no. Of course you're going to vote yes on this one. This is a no. This is an easy thing. That's there's right. There's no real decision in here. It just authorizes your side to take the next step if they want to.
The problem, I guess, legally in one, the issue is what basically they're doing is saying the union doesn't represent them anymore.
If they file that.
Yeah, if they file it, and what's the judge going to say? Well, it's like clearly a sham.
Well, and that's what that's why the NHL got in front of them to file the class action.
So the question is, Drew, is if, and then let's tie this all in together. If January 2nd is the day for the disclaimer to actually, you know, that's the day that, is that the day, Drew, they're going to,
That's the day the NHLPA has to file the paperwork.
Well, this is the question then, legally speaking, and it ties into your January 1st question. If the NHLPA negotiates after taking the vote, of people not wanting their players not wanting them to be represented, not wanting to be represented by them anymore, wouldn't it then be odd, in a legal sense, for them to negotiate for somebody who doesn't want them to be have them represent them?
It doesn't.
And
matter.
Then you hold can, on, listen, okay. listen.
So you're saying, Richie, there's a good sorry to cut you off. So there's a good chance that they decide not to exercise that option.
Well, no, I'm saying if they do exercise that option in January 2nd to negotiate, to have the people who you just voted to not negotiate for you, negotiate for you, and then you come to court and say, well, I don't want these people to negotiate for us anymore, that doesn't seem to me to be good faith.
Well, except what happened in the NBA, because this is exactly the same playbook here. The NBA players filed a disclaimer of interest while they were locked out, and then 12 days later, they agreed to the new CBA and the union was reformed. You know how slowly the courts...
Hold on. But when was the day for filing it?
When was the deadline?
I'm saying, like they didn't actually end up
Wouldn't
going through with
it,
right?
Same?
No, they filed the paperwork, but they never actually dissolved. They filed the disclaimer of interest, but when you file the disclaimer of interest, then there's then a period of time before the actual union is dissolved. And you know better than anybody.
Well, that's case by. I mean,
well, but you know better than anyone how slowly the courts move.
Oh, for sure.
So you know, January 2nd, they're going to file this disclaimer of interest, as far as I'm concerned.
But I think I would be surprised if they negotiate have serious negotiations, if at all, before that.
Oh, I don't think they will. I think they'll file it on January 2nd.
But that's what I was saying. After it, maybe that's when they have their they go forward. Maybe they. That's what I was going to say, is they maybe then, they have to really, they come negotiating at the table and then they don't dissolve the union. But until January 2nd, it would be appear to me to be an odd move to negotiate.
While this is still hanging over
their heads.
While
you're saying you don't want them to be, you don't want the union heads to represent you anymore.
That's
you don't
exactly what happened in the
then
NBA.
You file a disclaimer. Then before it dissolves, you say, I'm going to try and save this.
Absolutely. They'll file on January the 2nd, in my opinion. And then the courts will set a date for the actual, you know, dissolution of the union for sometime 3 weeks down the road.
And that's exactly...
After the end of the season deadline will have passed.
I think only discussions before then would be off the record kind of stuff.
Probably. Yeah. And then they'll have from January 2nd until whenever that court date is
exactly.
to get this deal done. Yeah. And if they don't get it done by the time that court date comes, then you're into the whole new dimension
and
in terms of CBA negotiations.
The court date will be after January 14th or 15th,
there
you go.
Point.
There's your timeline.
That's right. Well, I mean, and really you could say that the real timeline isn't January 14th, 15th. It's whenever that first court date is set for. So if that first court date is set for the 21st of January, you really have right up until that day to get a deal done before you have to to go to court or get off the pot.
I don't know, Drew. If that's the case, you basically might be starting the season in February when the season usually ends in mid-April, early April, second Sunday in April.
Look, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that January 21st is probably pushing it a little bit even beyond the pale at that point in time.
Yep.
I mean, because then you're not starting the season probably till the beginning of February as opposed to 94, 95 when it was started on January 20th.
Right.
So, I mean, but that's your timeline. That's how it's going to play out. They'll file, then the courts will set a date, and that window of opportunity is artificially created by the court system is your opportunity to save the year.
You know, just talking about this, and we've followed this like everyone has, from negotiation in New York to deal to legal stuff to, you know, the whole hockey-related revenue. It appears that if this goes to the court in New York, the NHLPA is taking way more risk here, and that's why I think that, you know, we are going to have a season there.
Actually, let's go to break, and I want to come back and ask this question on the other side. So I want to find out, am I the only one who would like to see what an NHL with no actual contracts would look like? It would just be chaos, but it might be entertaining chaos. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. It really has been as though somebody has stolen the sunshine of the city of Winnipeg as of late.
Wow.
Great song, Timmy. Love this song.
How about the comment? That was pretty clever.
How's what, Andrew?
What's this song called?
Lens.
Sunshine?
It's Lens. Steal My Sunshine.
Wow. This is very Dance Mix, like 1998.
More like 99 or 2000, I think.
I ever see the movie Go? This was featured in the movie Go.
Drew, who are you? Martin Scorsese? Like, what's going on here?
Look, it's a good movie. You should look it up.
What's it about?
They were classmates.
Me and Martin?
1999.
I call him Marty, actually.
1999 song.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey
Marty
Show.
Marty Scorsese, great eyebrows.
You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Before we went to break, we were discussing the CBA's disclaimer of interest.
Yep.
And we mentioned this last week. When the NHL preemptively filed that class action suit, one of the clauses that they indicated in that suit is that should the NHLPA be allowed to go forward and ahead with their dissolving of the union, all contracts in the NHL would be null and void, meaning anything that currently exists just doesn't exist anymore. It would be absolute chaos in terms of, well, there'd be 700 and some odd free agents.
Has that ever happened in the history of professional sports?
No. The closest thing would be if a team folded and there was a dispersal draft. But what was the last professional sports team to fold?
In any league?
In any league.
Probably CFL?
CFL, I would think. Yeah. Like the,
oh, fold.
The,
oh, okay.
The Renegades? So
saying, yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the last one where a team actually folded. It hasn't happened in any of the, you know, big four sports.
Right.
No, because there's always a relocation.
There's usually a relocation involved. You know, somebody was saying that's the only opportunity the NHL would ever get to shrink in size is if all the contracts became null and void. The NHL could buy out the owners of their they could buy the franchises from certain owners who wanted to sell. And they could go, and that's a way to shrink the size of the league. Now, I don't think it's really...
But the players, this is exactly where you have the problem, right? The players want to protect jobs, and they don't want anybody, you know, they don't want teams to be lost.
That's why they would never agree to contraction. Mm-hmm. The only way that the union would ever agree to contraction is if at the same time you added four roster spots per team or something,
right.
so that the net job benefit was pretty close to even.
See, you know what would be dangerous, Richie, in that situation, and I think that it's funny when you're talking about no contracts. It's almost like you're talking about the end of the world yesterday, or the supposed end of the world. It's like, what? No contracts, because there wouldn't be a minimum and a maximum. There wouldn't be a salary cap. There wouldn't be anything. So you could literally sign a guy for $25 million, and you could pay a guy $100,000. It's almost like it's like the Wild West. There's no rules.
It's like
it would be extremely dangerous.
Real life. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It's like real life, where you're not constrained by a salary cap. If somebody wants to buy, hire you, they can hire you for whatever you're demanding.
Well, yeah. What some people have said is, you know, Steven Stamkos, how much money does he make? Crosby, $25 million. I mean, how much are you going to pay a fourth line grinder?
And it's like we've said on the show, though, is that the top end guys, the Stamkos and the Crosby guys, are probably underpaid, and then the fourth line grinder guys are the ones who are overpaid. So if Crosby and Stamkos get $25 million a year, and we're just throwing out numbers here,
Chris Barch gets $100,000 a year.
That's not a bad thing, and that's not a bad system to have an effect. You need to you bring down the middle class is what you do. You know, you have the the superstars are hugely paid, and everyone else is paid at a more reasonable sum.
I was emailing the listener too. We talked about contraction. Remember that the players would prefer first of all to have all the 30 teams, but also to have teams move to more desirable destinations. Having said that, the league still determines the player's share based on revenue, not based on profits.
Right. So
it should be taken that into account as well.
Yeah, but it's impossible to argue that the revenue wouldn't be bigger in Quebec City than a team in Florida.
100% agreed, but if you take Phoenix out, you're cutting the revenue down regardless, and you're taking a jobs away, so they lose.
You're saying if you just remove Phoenix from the equation, the Phoenix Coyotes just fold, opposed to relocate. Yes, you're exactly right. The pool, of course, you're right. The NHLPA would never agree to if your options are keep a team in Phoenix or lose the Phoenix Coyotes altogether, they would always choose keep a team in Phoenix for A, the jobs, and B, whatever minimal revenue they bring in is still at least more than nothing they would get from a team that doesn't exist.
That's right.
Right now, it's almost gotten out of control already, and I still, have to believe that each side wants a season, but the way, they're setting themselves up, I think pro NHL and the NHLPA, if you look at what happened in the NBA and the NFL, it didn't get to that point that, you started getting into these prolonged legal disputes, but it seems like this, I forget the guy's name, the individual who was appointed in the New York court, Harvard law grad.
The judge are you talking about?
The judge, yeah.
Don't worry, it's in rapid fire.
What was his name?
Engelmeyer, wasn't it?
That sounds familiar. His name was, hang on a minute.
I think his first name was Paul.
Paul A. Engelmeyer.
From what I've read, it seems like that, the New York District Court or whatever it is, is gonna look at this and, like Richie said last segment, they're gonna say, okay, you're trying to say that you're not representing the players anymore, but then you've been negotiating this whole time, and you're going to continue to negotiate after you file the disclaimer of interest. They're going to look at it, and within 1 second, and say, "Are you kidding me? No, we're going to throw this out."
Don't assume the courts are going to do anything.
Assuming. I'm saying what the legal experts are saying is that nobody is saying that
this is uncharted territory. If it ever actually got that far, where a disclaimer of interest was legitimately argued in the court of law. It's never happened before in professional sports. So we're in uncharted territory. So what we...
Right, because the NBA never got to that point.
The NBA never got that far. Yep. They filed it.
Yep.
But before they argued it, they settled the CBA. Bill Daly was on Hockey Night in Canada radio, and he was asked point blank by Elliot Friedman, who was on the show last week. Mm-hmm. He was asked point blank, is there going to be a season? Daly said, yes, there is going to be a season. He only had two options to have, yes or no, and he said yes. Do you truly believe he thinks that, or do you think he's just trying? He's been the good cop, throughout these negotiations.
I think that he had to say yes or no, and he said yes because he couldn't say no.
Yeah, exactly. He can't say no. I mean, guys, let's be honest here. We're going to know in 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, or whatever, if there's going to be a season or not, and they have these guys, the big players. They have 3 weeks. They decide. They hold the fate. I mean, nobody else does. I'd love to have some type of role in this. I'd love for there to be a season. If they invited me in and said,
all of a sudden everybody gets paid in hoagies.
Right. But not just one side has to want a season, but both sides have to really try to work to get an agreement done here. So, I mean, I believe him when he says that. I think if they lose a season, again, and we've been saying this since the lockout started 100 days ago, if they lose an entire season, it can have extremely destructive consequences on the sport.
Well, if they lose this season, I think they lose next season.
Well, no, I don't know. But if they lose this season, it's the biggest embarrassment in sports history as far as I'm concerned. I'm not even kidding.
And it already has been, Richie. The NHL, okay, and the NHLPA, I realize I love hockey. We all love hockey.
Yes, as he was telling me earlier how much he loves the Spengler Cup.
I'll stand by that. I can't wait to watch Christian Dubé play for the Swiss League team.
Who did Christian Dubé play for in junior?
Do you know the answer?
Kitchener Rangers?
Hull Olympic.
Hull Olympic, okay.
They won the Mem Cup in 97.
Yep. I think
I went to see a couple Hall Olympic game when I was in Ottawa because Crosby was playing junior then, so we'd go across the river and watch Crosby play a couple times.
Nice. Yeah, I forgot what we were Crosby talking about. For?
Crosby played for my.
I'm forgetting even right now. It's from Mooski?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
What were we talking about before though? I forgot.
Who the heck knows? We're talking about the Spengler Cup.
Yeah,
let's go to break.
No, we weren't talking about the Spengler Cup.
You were saying how much you love the Spengler Cup.
You threw in a bunch of stuff, and I don't even... I was trying to make a point about something, but you guys got me off track.
You want some time to let it simmer, and you can think about it after?
Maybe. I don't know.
Hopefully, we'll get to talk about Jets games in February when we're talking about the chances that they make the playoffs, because every single team will have a chance to make the playoffs and will be a poor reflection of which teams are actually good or not.
Well, I remember what we were talking about, Richie, the embarrassment. I mean, the lockout 8 years ago, it ended up, strengthening the sport. The revenues went up. But this time around, I think what's happened, especially, in the public sphere, it's made everybody look bad. So I think that there's more at stake. When I actually went into this lockout thinking, oh, this is going to be over by November, end of November, maybe early December. Now the way this has gone, I think this lockout's worse than the last one, and the last one was pretty bad too.
When in the show do we get to overanalyze the Canadian World Junior Championships?
That's coming up in about 45 minutes.
Okay,
or so.
Okay.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shout out to @SpatulaPete, who's listening. I'm not sure where he's listening from, but he was very excited to find out that I said the word hoagie on air. So, shout out to SpatulaPete for tweeting at us. You can do the same. Tweet at us @IllegalCurve. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And, of course, the website.
I think I just Instagrammed... something in studio.
Yeah, exactly. You can follow us on Instagram and you can find out. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Coming up in about 30 minutes.
Drew, hold on.
Time.
What are you doing here with your BlackBerry? You've got it charged. I know you're about to catch a flight to Kentucky, but...
I'm just keeping it charged.
Richie just tripped over your BlackBerry cord. He can barely walk.
I know. I'm sorry about that, Rich. He'll be fine in a couple seconds. Still to come on the show, Bobby Holik is going to join us. HolikOnHockey.com. We'll get his thoughts on... the lockout, and coming up at 2 o'clock in 1 hour's time, Corey Pronman is going to join us to talk about the World Junior Hockey Championships. Gentlemen, I want to talk about Kyle Turris. Kyle Turris is in his short NHL career has been he's had a lot of controversy follow him. There was this time in Phoenix that ended poorly. He's now in Ottawa, and he was playing in Finland.
That's right.
During the lockout, and he came back and he was speaking to a Globe and Mail reporter, and he pretty much bashed his experience in Finland, and he was saying that the food was substandard, the travel was substandard, they had to eat at rest stops practically, or food trucks on the course of their 6 hour plane rides. Are players underestimating what the experience in Europe is like compared to the experience in playing in North America?
I think so. And we saw Evander Kane, come back after his bad experience in the KHL, playing with Tim Stapleton in Minsk, Dynamo Minsk. Guys talk to other players that have played there, and, they know it's not going to be like, the beautiful flights and room service and treatment they get, in New York City and Boston and Toronto and all these other cities. But the thing is, Drew, Kyle Turris spoke about this. I believe it was on radio in an interview.
It was an interview.
It was a recorded interview. Yeah. But then he went and then said, he said something like, what I said was, it was misrepresented. But
by the way, such a coward's move out. I don't believe for one second that it was misrepresented. The guy had the interview on tape, and he stands, and the Globe and Mail to this day stands by exactly what was written.
Right.
The only factual error in the article was it said that Kyle Turris was still in Finland when he was actually back at home by then. That was the only factual error. So just because of that one minor factual error, Kyle Turris is getting to claim that the whole thing was made up and was exaggerated and was misreported. If you're going to make these comments,
if you're going to make these comments, you have to stand by them. Don't then chicken out on comments and say that you didn't really mean it or you were misrepresented or it was taken out of context.
Poor little player getting to have to go to eat at truck stops. Poor little player having to take the bus for 4 hours and make 70 to 100 grand a year. Poor little
By
player.
By taking the job away from a guy who actually needs that money.
Poor little player has to eat burgers and fries and doesn't get steak served to him on the first class jet he takes, private jet he takes, and gets to go from car to car. Oh, I feel terrible for Kyle Turris.
Are you being sarcastic, Richie?
Yeah, the guy didn't get he didn't whine his way out of Phoenix, too. I mean, come on here. Let's be real. Let's talk about Kyle Turris. Kyle Turris is a whiner. He comes in the NHL. They get everything they want. He's been given a huge contract in terms of what he's produced so far. And he goes overseas to Finland. And he's not being treated as well as he is in the NHL. And he comes back and he whines about it. You know what? Kyle Turris can take a hike as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
and he bails on it, too, and he bails on the quotes, which is what a cowardly move.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, so he throws this reporter who's only doing his job. He gets his good interview, good exclusive, and then he bails out on the reporter and tries to blame the shoot the messenger. Yeah, you made the comments.
Did you say the reporter or Phoenix? Which one?
Both in that case. You know, you made the comments. Did you think that they were off-the-record comments that were being recorded in front of you? Obviously not. You know, just man up. You know, stand by your words.
Not say anything.
Or don't say anything at all.
The reality is, if you didn't have a good experience, I mean, there was something probably that you did, too, to make it a bad experience. I mean, from what I've heard, Finland is a nice country, and hockey is very important in Finland, and I haven't heard any negative stuff. So it seems like the guys that play in Europe, and then it doesn't work out, then they say, oh, it was this, it was that, it was the food, it was this. I mean, come on, it's excuses.
This is what I actually took from the whole article, aside from Kyle Turris being a whiner. It's how, I think that's in this room, I think many people in North America underestimate the changes for the young players, or players of any age, when they come from Sweden, Finland, Russia, to Canada and the United States. And so for a guy like Alexander Burmistrov, doesn't know much English.
Yeah.
It's a little bit less than Ezzy. But, you know, jokes aside, he's got...
That funny, Drew?
It was pretty good.
Granted, he lived in Barrie and stuff, but it's a huge cultural change. Mm-hmm. The style of play, how they practice, how they travel, how life is led here. So take into account these things when you're writing off prospects or things like that, or people aren't adjusting quickly enough. There really is a big adjustment period. Look at the Canadian players. Lots of them just bail out and come back with the American players. And so... whenever it's done here, it's the cowardly move, blah, blah, blah. And I realize they have outs in their contract there more so than they do here. Having said that, just take into account the big differences culturally. And I hearken back to an article written by Eric DeHatrick at the beginning of the lockout, you know, great writer. And he wrote about how Paul Maurice has really learned a lot coaching in the KHL, but how different the world is there and how hard it is for players to adjust from that KHL style and coaching, living there their whole lives, to being in Canada. And he's learned a lot from that. So I took that from the actual article.
Well, if you think you're going... when you sign a contract to go play in Europe, if you think you're going over there and it's going to be exactly like it is in the NHL, either you're the most naive player around or your agent is doing a pretty lousy job in actually explaining how the situation works to you. You have this Derek Brassard case. Yeah. He's left the team. He was playing in Austria. And he joined the EC Red Bull Salzburg team.
Isn't that Wheeler's team?
That is. It's where Toby Enstrom was playing, Derek Dorsett, David Clarkson. He left the team after six games. And the team says that they're going to be notifying the IIHF of the player breaching his contract. Because it is a breach of contract if you just up and leave. And then Alan Walsh, that noted legal mind, who's all about fairness and equality and everything, chimes up and he throws the team under the bus and says it's the worst hockey experience in North America. And then he has the nerve in Europe. Yeah. And then he has the nerve to drag in all these other players who left that team, who didn't have a negative word to say about it, but he says, oh, they all hated it also.
Okay, hold on a second, though. I mean, these guys are, I, by the way, I agree with you, but these guys are using these teams as a convenient place to play while the lockout continues to go on. That's all these teams are. I mean, Blake Wheeler is not going to make a career in the Austrian league or Derek Dors. I mean, these guys are, let's be honest, they're using these teams to get a paycheck while the lockout continues.
Absolutely.
That's all. And, you know, I agree with the, you know, the culture shock argument. Of course, it's a culture shock when you go to a completely different country. You're going across the world, Canada, Russia, or whatever. It's not what you're used to. I mean, that's part of traveling. I mean, that, you know, right. That's what traveling's all about. But how good do you expect an experience to be when you're using a team, Richie, just to fill time?
That's right.
It's a time filler for these guys. I mean, they're going there. Sure, if it works out, great. And I mean, some guys have great experiences. Some guys have bad experiences. But to think that, you know, you're going to bash a team because it didn't really work out. It's like, well, you're going halfway across the world to play in a league because your NHL team has locked you out. I mean, how good do you expect things to be?
I think there's a saying amongst players. I read this either in an article or on Twitter or something, that you go to the KHL for the money. You go to either the Swedish Elite or the Swedish Elite League for the hockey, for the hockey competition, for the level of hockey, and you go to the Swiss League for the lifestyle. You know, these guys know that. So, you know, I really just can't stand this whining, especially what pisses me off, especially what gets me upset, is that these guys, and I've spoken about this on this program before, these guys are going over to Europe and they're taking a job from a guy who doesn't have another option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kyle Turris is playing for, you know, he is playing in the Finnish Elite League, playing for SM Liga.
That's the league.
Oh, sorry, playing for Karput Oulu. Oh,
yeah.
And you think that the guy he took the job from, you know, has another option? Probably not. That guy needed that job to, you know, raise his family or make a living or do whatever he wants. And so Kyle Turris floats in there, thinks, like you said, Richard, that he's going to get his private jets and his, you know, five-star hotels and five-star meals, and he's complaining about it while getting definitely being the highest-paid player on the team. You know what? Shut up.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, you've made a lot of money in your career. Either be a better financial manager if you if you're out of money at this point, or go home.
And he's only 23 years old.
And sit in whatever, you know, go home and do whatever you want and enjoy your life for a year. But don't go complain about it after you've taken somebody else's job who really does need that job.
Well said, Drew.
It's another one of those unfortunate things that people are sick of hearing about the lockout. I mean, we don't want to hear about guys whining about what they don't have when they have so much.
I agree. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Bobby Holik from HolikOnHockey.com. Still to come, Corey Pronman from, he's going to talk World Juniors, you know, from ESPN Insider. You can also follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Now that the New Year's Eve game is canceled, if you're looking for New Year's Eve plans, no better place to spend it than at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Two shows featuring Steve White. The first one's at 6 p.m. The next one is at the New Year's Eve gala show at 10 p.m.
Ooh, gala.
Yes, exactly, a gala.
Yeah, I was talking to people this week. They said they went to Rumors for a date last week or 2 weeks ago. They had a great time.
Of course, great date place. We've it's sort of better than a movie in that you can have the conversation. You get to see the person.
It's way better than a movie.
Oh, yeah, get to see. If the person
who goes to movies anymore, anyways,
lots of people.
Yeah.
If you get to see the person, to see if they have a good sense of humor, you know, are you laughing at what they're laughing at? Are they laughing at what you're laughing at? These are all the things you can find out there. Great date place.
It's really awkward. It was when those people at Rumors, because we've all been to Rumors many times. Those people that go there and they don't laugh. I don't get that. Why do you go see a comedian if you're going to purposely not laugh?
They're non-laughers. It's interesting.
There are people like that
thing.
who just say hi. And they'll just say hi.
Yeah, we say, hey, that's funny. But if it's funny, why aren't you laughing?
That's true.
And by you saying, hey, that's funny, that's depressing me because we're talking about this when we should just be laughing.
Some people do have, you know, it's like they're not, for whatever reason, they're not comfortable laughing out loud. It's one of those things where you might not be comfortable.
Those are called scientists.
Drew actually had a comedy routine of Rumors way back when. He just stood up on the stage and everybody just laughed.
Nice.
It was the highest rated show of all time.
To clarify, a note comes from John Clouston on Twitter. Blake Wheeler's actually playing for EHC Red Bull München in Germany, not EC Red Bull Salzburg in the Austrian League. Two different teams.
I got my Red Bulls mixed up.
You got your Red Bulls mixed up. Exactly. You know, so, but appreciate
Does he have wings? That's the question.
That's true. Shout out to at John Clouston for clarifying that.
Thanks for that,
us.
John.
You boys watched the Ice Caps game last night.
Yeah.
I was not able to watch it. I was, you know, curling. As I do on Friday.
Did you win, lose, or drew?
We definitely lost. It was not a good performance by win, lose, or drew too.
Are you still called win, lose, or you're called win, lose, or drew too?
It's the second year of the team, so win, lose, or drew too. Okay. Yeah,
best loser, name ever.
Is it loser, drew?
No, win, lose, or drew two.
Oh my God. That was win, loser, drew.
Yeah, understandably, it was not a good performance by us yesterday. So, Ice Caps game, you know. Yep.
What were your
first impressions? You know, start
that way. I think watched the game from beginning to end. I was kind of in and out. I taped the game, but I was in and out. I was entertaining some friends. We had good
time. I wasn't there.
Exactly. A couple of things. You know, I thought overall what I saw last night was a lot of what we kind of anticipated seeing, in that the players you expected to kind of be standout players were a little bit better than the others. You know, for example, I thought Jason Gregoire played really well in the glimpses I saw. He was on the puck. He
got
was smart. Yeah, he scored too, but I thought he played well regardless. He was skating well, showed some nice hands at times. Really good hockey sense, I thought, reading plays well. I thought he would impress me. You know, you see a little bit of a burst from a guy like Telegin, however you pronounce it.
Yep. I think it's Telegin.
Yeah, so and then you have, you know, a guy like Paul Postma moves the puck well, but Paul Postma again yesterday kind of showed me, well, that defensive coverages at times I thought were a little bit lax. I thought he was a little bit lazy at times, and I know he's got that big frame and he moves all right for a big guy, but you know, there were some questions there. I didn't focus a ton on Zach Redmond, so I don't necessarily want to comment, although he's been probably their best player. A lot of blah for the most part, though. I mean, they're a well-coached team. Keith McCambridge is doing a good job.
Yep.
But there's not a ton of high-end talent on that team,
Let me ask you this. The best player on that team, and obviously Bermy wasn't playing in the game. He's still injured.
Bermy doesn't count though, because you'd expect him to be on the Jets, right?
I'm not sure at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if they gave him another year there. But taking Bermy out of the equation, is there anybody on the Ice Caps who doesn't project or who projects to be better than a third line player?
I would say that. Well, if you're talking just forwards, I would say
forwards in that case.
I would say that probably the guys with the biggest upside that are on the Ice Caps right now, you'd have to start with Spencer Mihajlovic, then you'd have to go to Telegin, and then it's debatable who you think is one, and then you've got Carl Klingberg, but these are all guys that aren't going to probably be top six forwards in the NHL.
Let me rephrase the question. Who on the Ice Caps is a top six forward?
I think
on a team that is, say, on a playoff team.
If things somehow turn out well, you're hoping Telegin can somehow get to that point. But if you're betting, probably none of them.
Right now, the best prospect I don't think this is a surprise. The best prospects that they have right now are on defense. I think I agree with you, Richie. Paul Postma, I think his offensive skills as a defenseman are much better than his defensive skills. He's not overly physical, and you know, Zach Redmond. Ed Tate wrote an article about Zach Redmond on Friday. I thought it was nice for him to get some press. Zach Redmond, I think, is probably the best player right now on the Ice Caps. You know, he reminds me of, I'm not saying he's quite as good as Brian Rafalski. He reminds me of that kind of skater. He's a smaller guy. He reminds me a little bit of Brian Rafalski. But, you know, as far as the talent right now, you've got a lot of guys that are going to be kind of third line, fourth line guys on the Jets, whether it's Telegin, Mihajlovic, Patrice Cormier. And that's not to say that that's a bad thing, but you know, that's realistically what you're looking at. The Ice Caps are the problem. I think they're one game under 500 right now. They're actually two games above 500 now on the road. I think they're 8-6 on the road after that win in Hamilton. But they're having trouble scoring goals. And that was with they don't have Bermy right now, and I think Jason King is injured too. But they're the type of team that they're going to have to outwork the opposition. One of the things that has impressed me most in watching, you know, it's tough to watch every game, but Mark Dekanich has been really good for the Ice Caps.
Goaltender.
You remember, goaltender. And you look at last year on the Ice Caps, they had David Abisher for most of the season playing with Pasquale. And right now, that's probably their strength is goaltending. Dekanich had a shutout before yesterday's game. I think it was against Portland, if I'm not mistaken. But he was really good, and he's a guy that was drafted by the Predators, and then I believe he was let go by the Blue Jackets after that, and the Jets signed him. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that, you know, I think he's 25 or 26. So it turns out that the Jets made a good signing there because they've got Al Montoya on a one-year contract, and now they've got Dekanich, who is probably their second-best goalie.
So is Dekanich now better than Pasquale?
I don't know enough about it.
I don't know. I mean, he's definitely getting more starts than Pasquale right now, and he's older than Pasquale. He has way more experience because he played for the Admirals before the Ice Caps. But he's been really good, and he had another good game yesterday. But I still think the Ice Caps, last year, the Ice Caps, you remember, were one of the best teams in the AHL. This year, it's surprising they've struggled. They've kind of done this win one game, lose one game.
Well,
they've
not had a bad... surprising. You watched last night's game. First of all, it was really boring. Second of all, there's no offensive talent on the team, Ezzy. So that's why I'm concerned about the team actually making any form of a run, especially when you see these teams who are stacked with NHL guys.
You're right.
Oklahoma City and such.
Yeah, I mean,
you have Norfolk, who's had a really good job of finding gems. They just can't score. Yeah. I mean, yesterday's game was like, it was like scoring chances, like pulling teeth last night.
Yeah, they've had that problem all year, and they probably will continue to have that problem. But, you know, I think the strength of that team is going to be in goal and on defense. You know, Derek Meach right now is leading the team in points. So, I mean, the strength is on defense. And, yeah, it's going to be tough for them to score goals. I mean, you have guys. I mean, Spencer Mihacek, I think he's got a lot of upside. And he was a point-per-game player when he was called up with the Jets. But, you know, he's got to play with the right guys. And
on a good NHL team, is Spencer Mihacek anything better than a third-line player?
If that.
He's third or fourth-liner guy. He's not. No one's gonna mistake him for a 50-goal scorer. That's for sure.
Went through waivers last year, right? Nobody claimed him.
That should usually be a decent indicator of what kind of player you're getting.
Yep.
Anybody on the Hamilton side jump out at you?
Yeah, you know, Brandon Gallagher looked like...
He's their leading scorer.
Yeah, former World Junior guy. You know, supposed to be a kind of a rambunctious guy. I thought he played pretty well. I didn't focus as much on Hamilton, but he's Montreal. Smaller guy. Montreal seems smaller, but... You know, a guy who works hard, plays hard, and nothing. And Jared Tenorti, I tried to watch a little bit of. I didn't focus enough on.
Tenorti was the first pick. How many years? Was it a couple years ago now?
4 years ago, I think. That's Mark Tenorti's son, by the way. Former North Star.
Louis LeBlanc was on that team, too, and he was drafted in 2009, so I think Tenorti was 2010.
Who did they draft when the draft was last in Montreal?
Louis LeBlanc.
Louis LeBlanc, yeah. Okay.
He's on the team, too.
And he's probably the forward that there's the most hope for. You know what I liked is, there's a couple of guys. You mentioned Tenorti. He's kind of like his dad, like a physical guy. Nathan Beaulieu played a lot. He was a 2011 draft pick. For the Montreal Canadiens, and Nathan Beaulieu was really good, another defenseman who I really liked. But you know, it's the Ice Caps right now. It's a game like yesterday, 2-1. They're going to have to fight games like that because they're going to be a bubble playoff team this year. It's not like last year where they got off to that great start. So
we'll see. Anyways, it was at least good to be able to watch the Ice Caps last night.
Yeah.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.